welcome to the Entertainment Docket for the week of October 22nd. I am your co-host, Michael Staley, and alongside me is the lovely, talented, and Halloween-y Melissa Hansen.
I'm Halloween-y.
Well, leading up to that week, everyone's
I need to get
that.
There. I know I need to go pumpkin shopping so I can go jack-o'-lantern making.
There you go.
That's my plan for this coming weekend. Okay. So I'll get it in just under the wire.
Well, how's your weekend entertainment?
Yeah, so not only Halloween-y this weekend, I was Frankenweeny.
Nice.
This weekend. It's Tim Burton's new movie, which is based on his own work back in the 80s. He did a short, like a half an hour, live action with Shelley Duvall and Daniel Stern.
And Vincent Price.
And it's the story, it's a young boy whose dog gets hit by a car. That's not really spoilers. But he ends up bringing it back to life. And it's the Frankenstein story.
Yes.
But with a cute dog. And it sounds kind of perverted, but it's so sweet. It's just the sweetest story. It's sweet and heartfelt and lovely. And anyhow, I did this for Disney years and years ago when he worked for Disney.
Yes.
And then, correct, they thought he was too weird.
Yep.
And they, like, let him go.
Exactly. And John Lasseter was working for Disney at that time, too, and they let him go, too.
Yeah. But anyhow, so Tim Burton went on to become the Tim Burton we know and love.
Yeah.
Or hate, depending on your opinion. And now that he's, you know, big and famous, Disney went and released his new version of Frankenweenie, which is animated. And it's black and white, which is a very interesting take. Mm. And the voice cast in this, Catherine O'Hara, Martin Short, Martin Landau, Winona Ryder.
Wow.
And Charlie Stahan, I think, plays the little boy, plays Victor.
Oh.
And he's been in a few things. He was in, like, Charlie St. Cloud, that Zac Efron one.
Right.
But anyhow, so he went into, Tim Burton took his half-hour short and turned it into an hour-and-a-half animated movie.
All right.
And it's amazing. All of the visuals from the short are in the movie.
No kidding.
Yeah, like beautiful. Like if you've seen it, and you can go watch it on YouTube. I know it's been on some DVD releases, like as an extra.
Yeah, it's on the Nightmare Before Christmas.
And that's the official. So I'm going to tell you that's the way to watch it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, there's, you know, non-approved images on YouTube, which you should not watch because that would just be wrong. But it's out there if you go and, you know, you search it on YouTube.
Right.
Anyhow, and it's really beautiful. I love the half-hour short. So I was so excited for this movie. Like I said, all these visuals, like the baseball hitting the curb and things like that, it's all in this.
Nice.
It's just expanded. Like, there's more about his science teacher and the science fair going on. Oh. And then you get to meet his other classmates, get to know them, and that's how they expanded it.
Okay.
And, like, Winona Ryder plays Elsa Van Helsing.
Oh, nice.
It's a very Lydia-ish role.
Oh.
It's kind of cool.
All right.
So, but it was beautiful. It was perfect. It was, like, I couldn't have asked for anything more. I wouldn't have changed a frame until the last maybe quarter.
Oh, no.
And then the way he expanded the story.
Yeah.
I hated.
Oh, no.
I hated. And now that it's been a couple days since I saw it, it doesn't bother me as much. But sitting in the theater watching it.
Yeah.
What happens is the other kids find out. And he's going to win the science fair with this. So they want to do it themselves. And they bring their animals back, but things go wrong.
All right.
And I hate that things go wrong, and I hate the way they go wrong, and it's like, it's ridiculous, in my opinion. So anyhow, like three-fourths of the movie, it's just pure perfection. A quarter of the movie, looking back at it, it's more like, than terrible. But still totally worth seeing. I mean, this is not being viewed as much as it should be.
No, absolutely
not. I think younger kids, I think, will be bored. It's not that scary kind of thing.
Well, I mean, not because I offered
Disney movie where, you know, princesses are being, you know, killed. But it's really, really, it's lovely. It's fun. There's tons of stuff for adults in it. But older kids will definitely like it, too.
Nice. Well, I had offered my nieces and nephew at the time to go see Frankenweenie or Hotel Transylvania. All three of them said Hotel Transylvania because Frankenweenie was too scary.
Nah, I mean, it is. There's I mean, their animals come back not normal.
Okay.
But, I mean, it all works out in the end, and it's all beautiful in the end. And like I said, it has such heart and love in this story, to be honest.
Oh, good.
So,
I'm sure I'd see it this week. So.
Yeah, you should. Make the kids go.
Yeah, because this past week I went and saw Argo, which is Ben Affleck's new movie. And my scene, which I shot an entire day doing, did not even end up in the film.
Of course. That always happens. That's so upsetting.
But I guess it screened at Toronto, at the Toronto Film Festival, and the Canadian ambassador, upon whose story this is built, asked Ben to change the ending. Now, I'm guessing the scene we shot, given the script that, you know, what little script that we saw, was probably that original ending.
Got it. Change it to make it more realistic?
To make it more historically accurate, apparently.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because usually they change it just based on the whims of an audience.
Yeah.
If an ending gets changed, it's like, oh, the audience didn't like that. Let's go figure something else out.
Right.
So that's really cool that they did it and that Ben was willing to do that.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing.
Make it more accurate.
If you liked Gone, Baby, Gone, and you like the town, you're going to absolutely love this movie because it is a classic 70s potboiler drama thriller, you know, very tension-filled from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's a little dramatic license taken towards the end, but it's in tune with that 70s vibe, and that 70s vibe is established from the very opening shot where they use the 1970s Warner Brothers logo.
Oh, that's cool.
And the whole opening is done in that kind of 70s film grain with, you know, dark damage, and then it goes into the film, which is, you know, pristine the rest of it.
Right, but that's kind of cool, that whole nod to it.
Yeah.
That time, just to set you up, just to bring you back to that time period and what the world was like.
Yeah.
And yeah, very cool.
So this is 1979. It's the Iran hostage crisis in which the students were, you know, there was the overthrow of the Shah of Iran, which we get some backstory on that, which is going to make everybody extremely uncomfortable. About how that came to be and the role that America and Great Britain played.
Every big story like that, if we, you know, look at all the facts.
It's so disturbing.
Very upset.
You know, here was a country that had just established their own democratic elections, brought in their own officials, and then because of the oil rights that the previous administration had just opened up to the West, they went and put a dictator back in place.
Of course.
And everything.
But it was our dictator.
Right. It was we and the,
so it's okay.
God, it's so disturbing. But Ben does an absolutely beautiful job of mirroring, and they show this at the end. They mirror shots of the actual news footage to what they used in the film. But there is news footage from all the major networks used throughout the film, embedded a lot like they did, J.J. Abrams did for Super 8 with, you know, the just kind of placement of certain little things. But this is done on a much grander scale. The cast is phenomenal. You know, Ben is in this, and I know he doesn't like directing himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he, let's face it, he is not the world's greatest actor, but what he does extremely well.
That's true, like acting-wise.
Right, he's not a chameleon like Gary Oldman who goes from character, and you're like, oh, wow, that can't believe that's Gary Oldman.
Right, Benji's Benji.
Right.
But, man, I'm telling you, the direction that I've seen him do, the stuff he's directed, he is a phenomenal director.
Yeah. Oh, the location shooting in this, the way they shot a lot of it in Los Angeles and the way they made it look like Tehran. I mean, it doesn't take you out of the film one.
Okay, can I just say, though, there's some areas of Los Angeles that are going to look like Tehran.
This is true. This is very true. But, no, you are on the edge of your seat from start to finish. And there's a great – and the thing is, he breaks it up with some phenomenal humor from Alan Arkin and John Goodman, who are absolutely brilliant in this. As a Hollywood producer and a makeup artist.
Very cool.
Yes. Because the whole thing is all of these plans to get these hostages out have failed. There's nothing that they can come up with. They're like, well, maybe there are teachers. Well, there haven't been any American teachers in Tehran since the overthrow of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, maybe they're, you know, maybe they're this and maybe they're that. And they couldn't make anything plausible work. So what they came up with was an idea that they were a film crew scouting locations for a science fiction picture that needed kind of this grand old Mesopotamia, Babylon type feel.
Okay, yeah.
But these hostages, there were six that escaped, six staff members from the U.S. Embassy that escaped to the Canadian ambassador's home.
Okay.
Before the students were able to overthrow the entire building and take everybody else hostage.
Got it.
It's an amazing story about how the Iranians and this radical group kind of figure out that there are six people who are not accounted for, and the hunt that they start going on to find them, while at the same time the CIA is trying to get them out in a plausible way.
Yeah, wow.
And to create this science fiction film idea is the wackiest thing, but the way it plays out is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's one of those things that you're like, oh, that's too ridiculous to be true. Like, if this were just a script, people wouldn't buy it.
Right.
Because they're like, no one's going to believe this could happen.
Yeah. But okay. It's really, really one of the best films so far this year. And do not be surprised if this winds up on a lot of critics' top 10 lists for the year and is up for some serious award consideration.
Well, it's on my list to see. Good. So hopefully sooner or later I'll give my opinion on it.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of Argo, I think it held its own at the box office in the face of a film that everybody knew was going to make some good money this week.
Yeah. Paranormal Activity 4 came in first with $30 million. So no shocker there. But yes, Argo, that was $30 million. Argo came in second with $16.5 million.
Okay.
So huge drop there.
Yeah.
And then Hotel Transylvania with 13.5. All right. Taken 2, 13.5. And Alex Cross, under $12 million. That is not getting good reviews, which is so upsetting to me because that's the other big one that was on my list to see that I was excited about. And it is not looking like it's doing so hot.
Well, and there was just a press release that was issued, I think, on Friday that said that Patterson and Tyler Perry were finalizing deals to do a sequel. Based on his latest book.
I don't know. I've heard it's just kind of a lazy movie.
Really?
It's not like him. Like, he's bad in it, but, like, it's not very good. So, that's too bad. And, yeah, Frankenweenie only made $4.4 million. Frankenweenie is at $28 million total, and Hotel Transylvania is at $119 million.
Well, and Frankenweenie had a budget of almost $40 million.
I mean, they're not going to lose money on it in the end, but man, that's really, really upsetting.
Well, and we know that Disney has already pulled Henry Selick's latest stop-motion animation picture. So I think it's going to be a while before we see any more animated films of this type, because Paranorman didn't do very well either.
Yeah.
In fact, it's coming to DVD and Blu-ray in just a couple, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That's how quickly it got out of the theaters and onto... you know, to try and still capitalize on the Halloween season.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. All right. Well, coming up this week at the box office, we have four films, one of which is getting a heck of a lot of press, and that's the Wachowskis' Cloud Atlas, which is meeting with split critical response, but it's still sitting at 78% on Rotten Tomatoes. So I think this is going to be a love it or hate it type
situation. It sounds like it.
Yeah. The other film that's opening fairly big for the Halloween season is called Silent Hill Revelations 3D.
Yeah.
So this is part of that continuing franchise, you know. And
right.
For horror fans who have already seen Paranormal Activity 4 and want something else, well, here's another thing for Halloween week. We've also got Gerard Butler's pre-rehab surf movie called Chasing Mavericks, which he's on the press trail now, and a lot of those questions are focusing on his addiction to prescription medication. So,
okay, because that's any of our business and has anything at all to do with the movie.
But you know how this...
You know
how this works.
I know.
And then the fourth movie is interesting. It's a teen Halloween adventure comedy from Chuck creator Josh Schwartz.
Oh.
Called Fun Size. So it's a girl who's in charge of taking care of her little brother on Halloween, and she's hanging out with all her friends, and her brother is in costume. They're supposed to take him trick-or-treating, and he disappears out in the midst of all these other trick-or-treaters. So her and her friends have to track him down before mom and dad get home and find out he's gone.
Okay. And this stars Disney Channel star Victoria Justice.
Yeah, I think she's Nickelodeon, right?
Oh, she is, Nick.
Yeah.
You're right. Sorry.
That's okay. But it's also Disney-owned ABC star Jane Levy from Suburgatory.
Yep.
But it looks to be, you know, kind of the antithesis to kids who can't go see the big horror movies, but here's a Halloween picture for them to see. You know, the teens and preteens. So we'll see how that plays out. I have a feeling Cloud Atlas is going to make a buttload of money this weekend. So.
Yeah.
If you are not going to the box office and focusing more on your Halloween activities or what's coming to DVD this week, a Halloween-themed thing you might want to rent is Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which we talked about previously when I saw it in the theater, and it was kind of, you know, it's an intriguing idea, but had terrible execution. And sadly, Tim Burton's name is on this as well. Mm. But it's the guy, Seth Graham Smith, who co-authored his Dark Shadows screenplay, which I was not incredibly thrilled with. But this is based on his own graphic novel that did extremely well.
Okay.
We're talking about Disney's latest entry in the Tinkerbell Fairies franchise is Secret of the Wings, which apparently Tinkerbell finds out she has like a twin sister or something on the winter side. Yeah, but you know what? These movies have done extremely well. John Lasseter has had a big hand in shaping how these stories come out. And each one, I've reviewed two of the three so far, and they hold up incredibly well. They really are good pieces of animation as opposed to some of the schlock that Disney has turned out
direct-to-DVD
in recent years. Another big release this week is Magic Mike, which you saw, Male Strippers and Steven Soderbergh, right?
Yeah, it's... Like I said, it's more, I mean, yes, you get to see guys dancing.
Yeah.
But it's more like, it's a dramatic love story, and it's also kind of a workplace drama.
Okay.
It's just that they happen to work in a strip club.
All right.
I don't know. And Channing Tatum is so great in it.
All right. Well, I have it here to watch.
Excellent. So.
We were talking about Tyler Perry. If you long for another Madea movie, you're in luck this week because Madea...
You long for another Madea movie. What is wrong with you?
Hey, he's got a huge franchise going with this
But there are like 100 Madea movies out there. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with like finding that funny.
Yeah.
Or enjoying that, but geez, how many do you need?
Oh my God. Well, this time Madea is starring opposite American Pie and SCTV star Eugene Levy in Madea's Witness Protection. Universal Monsters, that huge, beautiful box set that came out a couple of weeks ago, is now getting individual releases. So if you just love Frankenstein, you just love Dracula, those are all coming out. Also coming out from Paramount in individual releases, if you didn't get, or I should say Fox, from the... individual releases of the Bond films, if you did not buy that huge Bond 50 box set. Specifically, they're targeting Daniel Craig's two previous Bond films.
Nice.
Because that opens in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Skyfall does. One of Stanley Kubrick's earliest films, an existential World War II drama called Fear and Desire, which was done independently on his own dime.
Ooh.
Yeah. And... it kind of bookends Full Metal Jacket. So Full Metal Jacket was about Vietnam and, you know, kind of a battle-scarred soldier who kind of loses it. And I guess this is a similar story in the World War II setting. And then one other movie that kind of went in and out of the theaters really quickly, it's a pre-apocalyptic romantic comedy called Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Yes.
It starts Steve Carell.
This disappeared quick.
Yeah, very quick. So, if you want to see that, and it didn't get very good reviews, to be perfectly honest, marketed it as a comedy, and it's more of a drama. And
yeah, that's the problem when they don't know how to market things.
Right. Yeah.
It ends up never doing well.
Right. Okay. In terms of streaming media this week, coming to Netflix, we've got Mike Judge's first primetime animated series, King of the Hill, which went on far longer than I expected it to go.
Yeah. Yeah, that did last quite a while.
Yeah. We've got Eddie Izzard's version of Treasure Island, which was done for, I think, ITV, British Television, co-starring Elijah Wood. We've got the 1967 James Bond spoof Casino Royale, not to be confused with the Daniel Craig Casino Royale. And this is David Niven and Peter Sellers and Woody Allen. It is very funny, very madcap. Woody Allen's Manhattan also comes to Netflix. And the Oscar-nominated French-Canadian film Monsieur Lazare is also on Netflix this week. Over on Hulu, we've got the 1980 comedy The Gods Must Be Crazy, which is about an African tribesman who discovers a Coke bottle, and that's his his entry into
modern.
Yeah, this
is a bit of a cult classic movie.
Yes, it is. Julian Fellowes and Robert Altman team up for the exceptional Gosford Park, which was kind of a precursor to Downton Abbey.
Yeah, very much so.
We've got the Oscar-winning documentary about Muhammad Ali's rumble in the jungle called When We Were Kings. Another documentary is the life of Playboy producer Robert Evans in The Kid Stays in the Picture. And one of the final blaxploitation era films is 1980's One Down, Two to Go, which stars Richard Roundtree, Shaft, Fred Williamson, and NFL star Jim Brown as a group of hired muscles taking down the mob in New York.
All right.
So that's all I've got. I'll throw it over to you for television.
Okay. Well, TV. Well, Monday night is presidential debate. They're focusing on foreign policy.
Oh.
So that is pretty much it for Monday night.
All right.
But we have a few more shows, season premieres this week. Tuesday on ABC, Happy Endings and Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. Is that still it? I don't know. They kept changing the title. I don't know what they finally landed on. But anyhow, those are both back. And then on Friday, Gordon Ramsay is back with Kitchen Nightmares on Fox. So you can go see disgusting, gross restaurants.
That you will never eat in ever again.
Never, ever want to eat in any restaurant, ever. Anyhow, in music this week, the big release is Red by Taylor Swift. So I'm sure that will do quite well. But Tony Bennett actually has a new one. It's one of his duets albums, but it's called Viva Duets, and it's all with Latin singers.
Nice.
Which should be very cool. And then, okay, time to feel really old.
Uh-oh.
There's a deluxe edition of Peter Gabriel's So.
Oh, jeez.
Because it's the 25th anniversary. Yeah, exactly.
The 80s weren't that long ago, people.
So I mentioned how Christmas albums are starting, and this week we have a couple. Lady Antebellum, On This Winter's Night. That should do quite well. And then one of my favorite singers, Colby Calais, has one called Christmas in the Sand.
Oh, nice.
Because she's a California surfer girl. So
yeah.
Her version of Christmas.
Yeah.
Books this week. Nothing but James Patterson, but we have John Grisham.
Oh.
Instead, back to his typical legal thriller called The Racketeer.
Yeah.
And Tom Wolfe has a new novel out.
Oh, my God.
Which has been quite a while. Back to Blood, that one is called. And then there's a few autobiographies. We'll start with one, Aaron Fisher. And he had some co-writers on this, but I'll tell you the name of the book and you'll know who he is. It's called Silent No More, Victim One's Fight for Justice Against Jerry Sandusky.
Yikes.
So, I mean, we've heard what some of the stuff that was said in the courtroom, but you can hear his story from his side. And then on a happier note, Rod, the autobiography by Rod Stewart, which should, we'll see what he wrote, but should have lots of good sex and hot women in it. Cause dude, he's Rod Stewart.
Yes.
And then, Peter Criss, along with Larry, Salmon, Makeup to Break Up, My nice. Life in and Out of Kiss.
Nice.
So again, talk about some good stories there.
Yeah.
In theater this week in New York, Soho Playhouse, which is off Broadway, but there's a new musical called The Other Josh Cohen, and it's a comedy. It's about this guy who, like, he gets broken up with, and then his apartment gets robbed, and, like, everything's going wrong. But when they rob his apartment, the only thing they leave is a Neil Diamond CD. And so it's a musical. It's with new music. It's David Rossmer and Steve Rosen.
All right.
Wrote it and wrote all the music and stuff. But the music and a lot of it is based off of Neil Diamond.
Uh-huh. So it's not like an all shook up thing where they just use Elvis
no,
music.
No, it's not just okay. Neil Diamond's music, but the play is a lot about Neil Diamond.
Nice.
So I think Eric and I are going to maybe have to go watch this.
I would assume, yes.
So anyhow, that sounds like fun if you were out there. And that just officially opened again at Soho Playhouse.
Nice. So. Well, over on the entertainment news front, NBC has pulled the plug on Tyler Labine's Animal Hospital, putting Whitney into that slot. Now, there's still no word on when Community is coming back. And if you've seen, the cast has put out a YouTube video saying that no matter when we do come back, it will be October 19th in spirit, in our hearts. It will be October 19th. And what October 19th stands for. But Chevy Chase is making noise again.
Coming on, you know what? I don't disagree with him on this one.
Yeah, but it just seems he could do it in so much better ways than he's choosing to do this.
Yeah.
He came unglued on the set the other last week, and it seems he's tired of Pierce being portrayed as an idiot and a racist and a bigot.
Right, and just that they're going farther and farther in that direction.
Yeah.
Like, they're changing the character in his mind, at least.
But he went down, he went on to drop the N-word in reference to co-star Donald Glover and Yvette Nicole
Brown. Well, yeah, but what I read is the quote was, he's like, how far are you going to take Pierce? Are you going to have me saying N-word next?
Yeah.
So now, he wasn't calling anyone this. He wasn't using it himself. He was making an example of how far they've taken the character. And are they going to make the character say this word? He wasn't actually like calling anyone it or just using it in conversation.
Yeah. But the story I heard is that he caught himself right away and apologized in the moment. But it's one of those things that once it's out there and the media grabs hold of it.
Right. And this is, and I will, and I'm the first one to say when he's being an idiot too.
Yeah.
I think I've said that, what a jerk he's being and other things. But I have his back on this one. I don't think he really did anything wrong. I think the media is totally making an issue of it.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that he didn't do this behind closed doors and he did it where everybody could hear.
That's
it.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
Speaking of coming unglued, Joaquin Phoenix, who did an exceptional job in The Master, and he's batshit crazy. I mean, when it comes to actor out of control, he's the perfect
example.
Sorry,
did you just figure this one out, or...?
But he was doing an interview with Interview Magazine and said of Hollywood and the Oscars, and this is a direct quote, "I don't want to be a part of it. I don't want to believe in it. It's a carrot, but it's the worst tasting carrot I've ever tasted in my whole life. I don't want this carrot. It's totally subjective. Pitting people against each other, it's the stupidest thing in the whole world."
Excellent. I wouldn't disagree with his sentiment.
So,
I probably wouldn't have said the word carrot so many times. That makes it sound doofusy.
But of course, this is on the heels of the start of award season, of which he is going to be considered for his role.
Right.
We talked about Steve Carell a little while ago. He is going to star in the Disney adaptation of Judith Viewer's Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day.
This makes me very, very excited and very, very scared at the same time.
Yes, exactly. Because it's a great little book.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, it's one of the best kids' books out there.
Yeah. Brendan Fraser is getting a pilot for TNT.
Ooh.
Legends. It's a spy drama that sounds an awful lot like Michael T. Weiss's NBC series, The Pretender.
Oh, that could be interesting, though.
Where the lead character is a chameleon who morphs into a different persona each week to solve a mystery or a crime.
Okay. Yeah, it does kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that could be good. They've done some good work. TNT's had some good stuff, so. And he's always fun to watch.
He is. Yes. There was a brief tease that released on the Iron Man 3 Facebook page. It was a teaser trailer with a quick look at Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin, who's the villain in this film. But the full trailer is being released on Tuesday, so we'll be able to get a clearer picture of how that film's going to shake out. Writer Marty Noxon is best known for her contributions as to Joss Whedon's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, is heading to Pixar.
Uh-huh.
To collaborate on an unspecified project with their keeping under wraps.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Yep.
Ooh.
Two other quick things. Remember those terrible Kirk Cameron movies Left Behind about the rapture and all this kind of stuff?
Yep.
Well, guess who's going to star in the reboot of that franchise?
Who?
Nicolas Cage.
Well, you know what? That's actually not that shocking. Because he's as batshit crazy as Joaquin Phoenix.
Okay. And finally, people have been hounding her, but Aaliyah Shawkat has come out and confirmed that Arrested Development will not stoop to making any cheap references to Carly Rae Jepsen's summer pop hit Call Me Maybe.
Okay.
Because I guess a lot of people were thinking that that would be, you know, maybe Fiunque. Yeah.
Maybe. Got it.
Maybe. But she would not comment on the continuing use of hot cops or cornballer jokes.
Okay.
So.
Nice.
All right. That's all I've got for entertainment news.
Okay. Well, Kimmy's officially old. She just turned 32 this weekend.
So she's applying for Social Security and Medicare.
Rome with Kanye, whatever, celebrating, because isn't that what I'll do when I turn 32. We go to Rome. But the interesting thing is, of course, rumors have been swirling about her and Kanye getting engaged since they started doing it. But Ryan Seacrest, who has an in with the Kardashians, he produces their show.
Yes.
He was talking about Kim being over there and how she was demanding a birthday engagement ring. And Ryan Seacrest said, quote, "I think we could definitely see an update on this story on Monday."
Oh, boy.
So he's betting that they're going to get engaged. So I haven't heard anything yet. So keep your eyes and ears open.
So there will be a new Kardashian special called Kim and Kanye.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure, because televising her first wedding. It wasn't even her first.
No.
Was it her second? Third, whatever number it was. But her most recent, shall we say.
Jeez.
Because I'm sure there'll be a couple more. Anyhow, that went so well. She should really, absolutely televise the next one.
All right. Well, bombshell. Actually, no. Let's take that engagement thing one step further and wish our very own Michael Rubino congratulations on getting engaged this weekend.
Yes. To his lovely fiancée, Abby.
Yes.
And his partner in crime and the improv and movie making and all that fun stuff world.
Yes. They go on to do much more creative stuff and more powerful stuff together than they did individually.
Yes. And then we also have to do congrats to Patrick Nagle on
this
his recent
correct.
Marriage.
This is correct. I forgot about
Love
that.
Love is everywhere at Verdict.
Yes, it's been a happy couple of weeks here around the Verdict office. So, on that note, we thank you guys for tuning in. As always, you can check out our wealth of reviews at DVDverdict.com. But until we rejoin you next week, Melissa Ann, take it away.
But kiss me out of desire, babe, not consolation. You know it makes me so angry, because I know that in time, I'll only make you cry. This is our last goodbye.